Well, I'm not talking about shutting the lights off or making sure the carpet's clean or paint's not on the wall. And talking about the idea of rules that every local church should follow, talking about us as people. It's very clear when we look at scriptures, there are many things that we can excel in. I've said this many times before, you can go down to the local Barnes & Noble and look on the shelf and see thousands of books that pertain to the idea of self-help. It will tell you how to improve your life, how to change a gasket on a car, how to do many things in this life. But as I've said so many times before, if we really want to know about how to be a Christian and do so and be a success, we have to look at the Scriptures. And so as we contemplate the idea this morning and next week as well, I want to suggest or offer or submit to you things that you can improve on that ultimately will affect the congregation as a whole in a tremendous way. I know we have several visitors here this morning that are not members here at Greenwood, but I would urge you to take the 5 points that we'll talk about this morning home with you and apply these things to the congregations to which you are part of. The first one being this. Tell yourself over and over that since you are not perfect, you would not fit into the perfect local congregation. Now, I'll tell you, this is a big one. We might say, well, I would never say that I'm perfect. We might not vocalize that, but boy, we sure let that mull over in our minds, don't we? The singing's too slow. Never would you accuse Adam of not smiling enough when he's leading singing. But there are a whole host of things that we would, sitting in a service, complain about. And when we complain, what we're saying is really, it doesn't meet our standards. And really, if we had the opportunity, we could do it better. If we just had control, if we just had some say-so, we could do it better. And so I've come to appreciate this, to understand my imperfections, my weaknesses. And when I understand those things, then I'm more willing to overlook some of the shortcomings that might be around me. Too many people are looking for the perfect congregation. One has this flaw. One has that flaw. There's not enough of this age group or not enough of that. The members are too old. The members are too young. There are too many hypocrites. The people are too apathetic. The preacher's not dynamic enough. The preacher is too short. He's too long. The list goes on and on. I want us to consider for just a second. I'm not going to read the text, but you can turn over to Revelation and look at the seven churches of Asia there. And I want you to, as I just tell a little bit about each of these local congregations. Ask yourself, I want to ask you the question, and ask yourself, which one would you like to be part of? We think about the church at Ephesus. It was a diligent worker, but it lacked love. When we think about the seven churches of Asia, and that aspect, when we think of the church at Ephesus, they were a diligent worker, but they lacked love. Smyrna was poor and suffered heavy persecution. Some were told that they would be encountering even more and facing prison. I'm sure all of us would want to be a part of that local congregation, wouldn't we? Pergamos was located in a bad section of town. In fact, Jesus describes it as a location of Satan's throne. Some have been killed for their faith, but others compromise the truth, falling into sin, such as fornication, idolatry, and even false teachings. Surely we'd want to be part of that group, wouldn't we? Thyatira was known for its many good works, but it allowed false teachers, women, to serve in their midst. And she had led some of the members into committing fornication. We'd like to be part of that local congregation, wouldn't we? Sardis looked active on the surface, but they were basically dead on the inside. They were once a strong congregation, but no more. As we talked about in our adult class, they had lost that. However, there were a few strong members still in Sardis, but most were dead. We want to be part of that group, wouldn't we? The church at Philadelphia is spiritually weak, but it has a number of opportunities and remains faithful to God. We'd like to be part of that group, right? A lot of work involved there. The Laodiceans, it was a wealthy congregation, but is spiritually so and so. The members are full of their own greatness that they could not see the things that were lacking in the local congregation. We'd love to be part of that group, wouldn't we? You see, what I've come to appreciate in studying scriptures, when we speak about the local congregation, there is no perfect local congregation. Every local congregation has its problems, has its challenges. And each problem differs from local congregation to local congregation. But I will say this, that none of us will just drift into heaven. But yet we seem to do this with local congregations. We see church hopping. We see it happening every single day. Somebody doesn't like what happens in one local congregation, or there's a personality conflict, and we up and we uproot ourselves and we move to a different congregation, only to find ourselves in a whole different set of problems in that local congregation because they're not like us. You see, just because you hop to another church doesn't mean, a local church doesn't mean that there won't be any problems there. There will be, because you're moving there. I hope we appreciate this. I think one of the great principles that each and every one of us need to apply in our own life is tell yourselves over and over and over again that since you are not perfect, you will not fit into another local congregation. If you're looking for the perfect local congregation, it's not out there. It's not found here. And so when we have this realization in our minds, we're more willing to work through some of the trials and the hardships that the local congregation that you're part of face instead of packing your bags and running down the road to the next local congregation. The second point. Instead of focusing on the worldly members in a local congregation, and there are worldly members in every local congregation, we see them, ones that come and sit in the seats and they're gone. They don't participate in anything. They're not really given to any specific cause. They just come on Sundays because that's what they've always done. And you see them out about and you see pictures on Facebook and you know they're living the worldly lifestyle. Instead of focusing on those members, and we should address that. I'm not saying ignore that. We should care enough about our brethren to help them overcome their weaknesses. But instead of focusing all our attention on worldly members, pick out the sincere, the dedicated, the spiritual members in the flock where you attend and thank God for them. Pray to God. Thank God that there are people that you worship with that love God with all their heart and set such a beautiful example for you as you strive to walk in the footprints of Jesus. I've come to appreciate this in life, that people will find what they're looking for. There's been a lot of wise men that have said this, but in Titus chapter 1 and verses 15 and 16, that's exactly what the scriptures teach us there. People will find what they're looking for. We look for a new house, If you're looking for specific things, you'll find that. If you go looking and you're moved into a new area and you start looking for a local congregation that has a lot of young people, you'll probably find that. You move into an area, you're looking for a congregation that there's predominantly older, more experienced people in there, you'll find that. But we need to test the things that we are pursuing. Thank you, Brother Ted, for reading that short reading. It took you longer to get up here than the reading was. But there's a powerful point in this. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 21, beginning, test all things, hold fast to what is good, abstain from every form of evil. Right? Reject what is evil. But I think sometimes as Christians, too often we reject good if we find evil anywhere nearby. As a Christian, we do our best to get away from evil, but we take it to the next extreme. And there might be some good in that area or good that we can do there. But because there's a little evil around there, we don't pursue the good. Now think about that. In a local sense, if there are worldly members and members acting in a worldly way, if our desire is to move completely away from evil and get as far away from it as possible, and I believe as Christians, that red line, we need to get as far away from that red line as possible. But we also need to be looking around. And when we can have an impact on people that are moving towards that red line, we better seize hold of that. And that includes ourselves. 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verses 16 through 17 teaches us to follow Paul, who was following Christ. We need to follow faithful men who are here as examples for us. Mark the blameless man, as we mentioned. Point out those spiritual members. Pursue those members. Ask them what they're doing right in their life and mimic what they're doing. But make sure they're following the Lord. We should, and we do, have men that serve in the capacity of eldership here. And us men should follow in their footprints. Look at their wives as a woman, walk in the footprints of an elder's wife. Do your best to focus on the positive instead of the negative. This is also an interesting one. If older, treat the younger with consideration that you would desire when you were young. Think back for just a moment. Some of us have to think a little longer than others. But think back when you were young. And think about some of the struggles you had and the approach that the older generation took with you. And think about it for just a second. As you live as an older person in a local congregation, don't view the younger in the congregation, younger Christians, as just a bunch of radicals who don't understand the Bible. But view them as the younger with consideration and desire to the best of your ability to help them. And if you are one of the younger in the local congregation, treat the elderly with respect. And I'll tell you, we're doing a miserable job with that as a society today. I see it in my own house. I see it in the houses of others. I see it out in the community as I stand in the grocery lines. Our young people treat their parents with a lack of respect. And it's awful and it's shameful. And if not careful, that carries into the local congregation and we find a gap, a divide in the local congregation where all the older people stick with themselves and the younger stick with themselves. And there's this lack of respect that the elders in the local congregation should get and have from the younger generation. Now, one of the things I've tried to challenge my kids, Ian, is go talk to one of the older in the congregation every time we're together. And I know that makes it hard now. We live in a crazy time. 2020's been crazy. But make an effort to reach out to the older generation every time we're together. And if it's nothing more than just saying hello, then you've done your part. But see, we've moved from that today. It's almost like the younger generation, we ignore the older generation. What do they have that we could really benefit from? That needs to change. It needs to change in society, and it needs to change with us as God's people. In Matthew chapter 22, let's turn over there for just a second. You know, there was a time that God's people took care of the older generation. They held them in high esteems. When the people struggled with questions and wanting to know what they should do, guess where they went? To the older. But we don't do that anymore, do we? We usually try to go to our best friends to get the information we want, maybe a brother or a sister. Instead of understanding this principle, to treat the elderly with respect. In Matthew chapter 22, and in verse 39, this is what it says for us. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. You know, I look at that in the most basic way that we can look at that text is to do unto others. As you deal with your neighbors, do unto others. Treat them like you want to be treated. I know I'm moving that way quickly. Someday I'll be one of the older in the local congregation. If God blesses me, I'll be that 70-year-old man that people shake their head at. But I hope that somebody comes up and talks to me. I hope somebody comes up and asks me about some of the problems they're facing in life. I have a lot of wisdom. I have a lot of knowledge pertaining to life. And boy, that would be awful to be an older person in a local congregation where the young have no respect for my wisdom that I have. And so what do? I reach out to them now because that's what I want to have happen as I get older. I don't want to be the person that nobody talks to. No older person wants that. And so as the younger generation, we need to appreciate that. And as the older generation, encourage the younger members. Help them to understand that they're of great value, not tomorrow, but today. And I'll tell you, if we can get the older generation to view the younger generation like that, and the younger generation to view the older generation like that, something great happens within the body of that local congregation. It's functioning on all cylinders. You know, 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 12 says, do not despise the young. 1 Corinthians chapter 16, 10 through 11, don't despise Timothy. Matthew chapter 18 and verse 8, don't despise the little ones or those that are young in faith. Catch that, older? That's your responsibility with the young generation. But what about the young? 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 5 says to submit to our elders. Proverbs chapter 16, a book that we're going through right now, verse 31. Gray hair is a crown of glory if gained through righteousness. Leviticus chapter 19. Give respect to the elderly. Job 12 and verse 12. Age brings wisdom and understanding. Something that every young person should be chasing after. Wisdom and understanding is so important, young people. And I will tell you, no matter how much you think you know about life, somebody that's lived a lot longer than you has a lot of insight that you've yet to gain and see. And it would be terrible for you to turn your back on all that wisdom and all that understanding. When tempted to criticize others, be sure to pray earnestly for them before you criticize and before you say the ugly things. That's an interesting concept. In Matthew chapter 7, let's turn over there this morning as well. Matthew chapter 7, and in verse 1 beginning, it says this, judge not that you not be judged. For with what judgment you judge, you will be judged. And with what measure you use, it will be measured back to you. Verse 3 of Matthew chapter 7 says this, "And why do they look at the speck? Why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, 'Let me remove the speck from your eye,' and look, a plank is in your own eye? Hypocrites, first remove the plank from your own eye, then you'll see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye." Now, before we want to criticize another individual, correct yourself. Look into your own life and see what you're lacking in. Be sincere with yourself. Before you reach out to somebody else to talk about somebody else, think about your own life, where your shortcomings are. I tell you what, this is a big one. This is where a lot of problems happen in a local congregation. We want to criticize each other. You know, I remember one time, Brother John Haynes, he used to do a bulletin, and he'd always find these little jokes to put in the back of the bulletin, and it was like a comic strip. And one of the comic strips that I guess I was probably 15 at the time, and I've never forgotten, was a comic strip on these verses here. And here this man is in sin. He's got a little speck. You could see his face, but there's just a little speck. And then there's another guy with a 2x4, and he's over there trying to reach this other man to pull the speck out of his eye, and he keeps hitting this man in the side of the head because he's got this big plank in his eye. It's obvious to everybody else. It's obvious to that man. He keeps getting hit by the big plank that's in your eye, but you can't see it yourself because you're so critical, hypercritical of everybody else. And you don't see your shortcomings. Psalm 51. Let's turn over there for just a second. Psalm 51. Hang with me, please, this morning. Psalm 51, in verse 9 beginning, it says this. Psalm 51 and in verse 9. "Hide your face from my sin and blot out all my transgressions. Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me. Do not cast me away from your presence, and do not take your Holy Spirit from me. Restore to me the joy of your salvation, and uphold me by your generous spirit." And then in verse 13, "Then I will teach transgressors your way, and sinners shall be converted by you." You know, I can't help but think in this text here, as David is speaking about his own life, there's lots of sinners around him, but what was David more concerned about? What was more pressing to David at this time? As he looks out and he sees everybody else in sin, it's pressed upon him that he needs to get his own act together first. He needs to get his own life right with God before he approaches somebody else. That's a great cross-reference to Matthew chapter 7. Pray for those who abuse you. Pray for those who don't act like a Christian. Pray for those Christians who call themselves Christians, but walk in a vastly different way than what God has called them, how God has called them to walk. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 44, "But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you." I'll tell you, it's easy to criticize. It's hard to be a Christian when things around you are not as they should be. It's even harder when you yourself are the person that's not walking as you ought to walk. So think about this. The next time you want to criticize, look at your own life, see where you're lacking, and set your hearts, your minds, to improve in what you need to be doing. And then lastly, we'll talk about five more next week. When you see work being neglected, instead of being critical and a complainer, offer to help. You know, we might look around and we might see here at Greenwood that there's work that needs to be done. I'm not talking about the physical work. There might be some spiritual work that needs to be done. In your mind, you feel it's not being done right. The temptation would be to be critical, maybe of the elders or the preacher, or connecting with the last thought that we talked about, other members. Before you're ready and so quick to be critical of the situation here at Greenwood, offer to help. Talk to the elders. Say, hey, I noticed this has been lacking. I want to take hold of that. I really want to help in that aspect where we're lacking. You know, I couldn't help but not think of Nehemiah. In Nehemiah chapter 2, again, I wish we had time to go through this, but in Nehemiah chapter 2 and verses 12 through 20, Nehemiah saw the devastation of Jerusalem and determined the work that needed to be done. Remember, Nehemiah rolls into Jerusalem, and in the middle of the night, what's he do? He walks around and he takes inventory. He looks and sees what's happened, what needs to be done. The opposite to this is Sanballat and his friends. Instead, they were critical and tried to stop the work. Nehemiah, looking to see what needed to be done and ready to do the things that needs to be done. And on the other hand, you have these individuals that are critical and they're wanting the work to stop. Brethren, we have them in every local congregation, and it's sad. We always have that one or two people that seem to be against everything that the congregation wants to do and are negative when it comes to the work. Don't let them influence you. There's work that needs to be done. And be the person that stands up, like Nehemiah, take inventory, and then get busy. When there's work to be done in the church, the local church, where you're at, what do? You see something needs to be done. How do you handle that? Do you go and you complain? Are you critical? Do you gossip? Or maybe you just don't say anything. Maybe I just sit quietly and somebody else will do it. How do you handle those situations? Maybe you run to the elders and you say, you guys need to fix this. How do you handle that when you see that something's lacking in a local congregation? Something for us to consider. You see, Nehemiah created a list. He knew where the repairs needed to be made when it came to the walls in Jerusalem. And what's interesting, when you study the book of Nehemiah and you get to chapter 3 and verse 1 and the following verses, you begin to appreciate that no one person did all the work. It wasn't never about one person. And I will tell you, in the local congregation here, the group will thrive and grow, not just because of the preacher, but because of everybody working together. That's how good things happen in a local congregation. Each one has a part to play, some bigger than others, but everybody has a part that they need to be involved with. So as we wind this down, here's the challenging part of the lesson for you to think about and go home and think about. What do you do for the local congregation here? Brethren, do I still have your attention? What do you do to help with the work here at Greenwood? What classes are you teaching? What material are you help writing? What spiritual part of the work here are you part of? And if you're sitting there struggling to find out, man, I'm just good if I get here, If that's you, I want you to understand this morning that you are needed, that you are valued here at Greenwood. There's something that you need to be doing. It might be pushing a broom or whatever it might be to take the load off the eldership and other people, but find something and do it. Don't just come here and sit. Too many Christians are falling into that category. You know, it's kind of interesting. Where are all the small congregations? They used to be all over the place. Do you know what's replacing all these small congregations? Big ones. Do you know why I feel they're growing? Big congregations are growing and swelling in numbers? It's because people want to get lost in the shuffle. We want to do the least amount of work spiritually as we can with the biggest bang. We've got the most members. Nice building. All of these things we beat our chest about. But in Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and verse 10, what's it say? Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. You can look at, one might say, well, that's the Old Testament. We're trying to make excuses. The person sitting there doesn't want to do anything. Well, that's the Old Testament. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 17 basically says the same thing. Whatever you do, do it with all your might. So I ask again, when it comes to the local congregation and the work here, what do you do? What role are you playing? What responsibility are you filling? What efforts are you making to assure that we, as a local congregation here at Greenwood, thrive and grow? I hope you'll go home and think about this. Challenge yourself. We didn't exhaust the verses that you could have evaluated. I'm sure some of you that are good Bible students probably thought about 50 other Bible verses that we could have used. Go home and think about those. And then come back with a renewed spirit, a new heart, wanting to simply be a servant of the Most High God, the only God, and serve Him with all your heart, and serve others with all your heart. And I'm convinced that if we do this, those that come in amongst us that are from the world, we'll have a tremendous impact on them. And the opportunities will blossom. But it starts with you. You can make a difference for both good and bad. But be committed to the good. Are you here this morning and not a child of God? Why not become one? We'd love to hear your confession this morning that you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of the living God. And upon that confession, we'll baptize you. There's a baptistry for those of you that are visiting right in behind you. We can take care of your needs here and now, but you have to come. You have to repent of your life. You've got to come to Him on His terms. If you're willing to do that, I'm standing here ready to welcome you on the front seat. Raise your hand, I'll come to you. But make your life right with the living God today and serve Him with all your heart till you breathe your last. We can help you in any way. I want you to make your request be made known this morning as we stand, as we sing.